Hello everyone, Blacksmith Waffen is on the regular chat. Are we live? I am always getting difficulty to know if we're live because of the sound fucking problem of Odyssey. How are you doing, people? Just give me a moment until we can confirm. Hello, test. Anyone hearing me? Holy shit. What a fucking mess for a live streaming. Hello. Okay, we are live. What a mess for a live streaming website. Not to be able to start a live stream without an audio issue. Steven Robinson says, has Mama been on her best behavior today? Mama is in punishment. We'll see if the punishment can change her behavior. But I cannot accept terrorism here in the studio. Hopefully we get eventually a better Mama JF comes out of this punishment period. Sing, muse, the rage of the silent white urbanite who endured countless subway rides among the scholars, burrowing down endlessly beneath the city as nude schizophrenics panhandle for loose change and threaten death upon innocent woman. Who was the blonde-haired man and what provoked him? Who was the blonde-haired man and what provoked him? Who was the blonde-haired man and what provoked him? Who was the blonde-haired man and what provoked him? All right, we have this song that was written to sing the praise of this white blonde-haired man who has taken it upon himself to make a chokehold with this guy. Unfortunately, it turned bad, and the guy ended up dying. That is really too bad. But people are on the fence on whether this guy should be prosecuted, whether he will be prosecuted. My fear is that he will be prosecuted, but we are talking here about someone who was making threats, who was behaving extremely in an unstable fashion, in a threatening fashion. Now, to what extent are you entitled to take action to protect yourself once when the threats are verbal, but when the person is acting extremely aggressive and extremely uncontrollable? This is the situation that happened in a New York subway. So they are now turning this guy into a victim. What appears to be the case is that there was a chokehold. This kind of chokehold, of course, comes with dangers. Those are not chokeholds you want to continue. If you continue them and you succeed at them more than 20 seconds, 30 seconds, you are entering the part where brain damage can happen and where someone can die. Now, it appears that this guy has decided to neutralize the black guy over 15 minutes. Now, we don't know. Does that mean that the 15 minutes he was holding on the chokehold? I would be surprised if that's the case. You definitely don't want to do this. This is a chokehold that is only valid up to the point of neutralization. That is about 8 seconds. More than 8 seconds, this chokehold is dangerous. So I don't know. Was it a technical error here, or was it the case of yet one more psychotic black guy who is in such a state of nervousness, and he is putting himself in a state of aggression so much that his heart is just at the limit of cracking up, and some white man does something and he passes over the limit and he dies. See, that's the problem. To what extent are you responsible for people putting themselves into physiological states of being close to death. Like, if I take someone who's in a parking position, who's at rest, and I make a chokehold on them, their physiology will be able to handle much more deprivation of oxygen than if I take someone at the height of extenuation because he's psychotic and because he's threatening people and because his heart rate is already at the maximum. See? And so Matt Walsh, for example, has been standing on his Twitter account for the idea that the white guy here is not only correct in having self-defended himself and defended the community around him, but that he is a hero. I think we know too little about the circumstances, but that is a view. That is a view that I don't find irrational. Ultimately, it boils down to self-defense in states where basically the police isn't even there to defend you. And if the police is ever there, certainly the DA will not be on your side. So what can we do? My take on this is don't be in the New York subway. Because the sad thing here is, here you have a guy who has done a service to the community in terms of protecting the community against a verbal aggression that was potentially escalating into violence. Because this guy was threatening people around. And there is a woman who complains that the day before, this very guy tried to throw her on the tracks. And she successfully escaped his grasp and ran away. And then he went on to harass other people. But what can you do when there's someone escalating toward violence? He's psychotic. He's a mental patient. He has plenty of criminal history behind him. What are you supposed to do as a citizen when your own police force doesn't get this guy under control? It seems here that a guy has decided to take it upon himself to neutralize him, and things went wrong. Now, that's too bad, because I don't expect the everyday citizen to be fully trained on the dangers of the chokehold and understand the limits of it. And what you have to ensure, especially for the body to be able to recover after the chokehold, and to be able to apply all of this in a nervous situation, is expecting a lot from non-professionals. John Drake says, don't be in New York, period. Exactly. Don't be in the New York metro. Don't be in New York. Don't be in the whole state of New York. Surya says, I always take the bus everywhere, safer than the tube, through the overground, though the overground is okay. I guess that there's a difference between those subways, what we call the metro in French. Fractalman says, the problem is that these scholars understand, all they understand is violence. You can't reason. You can't reason. You can't reason. Of course, you can't reason with someone like this who was a very schizophrenic harasser, known, you know, by people apparently in this subway. He was always causing trouble. He was also, his name is Jordan Neely, and is currently being elevated by the left as a kind of new George Floyd, a victim of racial oppression. And so what they have is a video of him, it seems a long time ago, I don't know how long ago, but they have a video of him dancing. He's a pretty good dancer. Let's have a look at the dance. Now, this contraction of the lower body, very, very high quality Michael Jackson imitation here. I wouldn't rate the creativity very high. This is really just a repeat of what Michael Jackson would be doing. But extremely well done with the hips going forward, the rest of the body giving a shock all at the same time and creating a wave also with the tip of the shoes lifting the body. Extremely well done. Isolation, 9 out of 10. Creativity, 4 out of 10. Execution, 8 out of 10. Excellent sequential movements of different quarters of the body. Very impressive. Good walk around. You know, he had the relaxed attitude while the performance being quite complex. He had the relaxed attitude of Michael Jackson as he was performing it. Excellent. And the moonwalk, properly executed, perhaps not as impressive as Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson could do something a little better, but for a Subway performance, all right. All right, so this guy has not died. Too bad. I think that there are schizophrenics, and what the fuck do we do with them? Because they will have behaviors that will make people legitimately worry, that will make people experience a legitimate state of criminal threat that, okay, this guy is potentially violent. And so there's... At some point, you have to be responsible for what your body does, and your body and your mouth are doing stuff and other people feel threatened by it. And there's just no resolution at the social level in terms of what we can do. The fact is your existence is threatening to others. Your behavior is scary. And eventually people are legitimately in a state of belief where they think you are a threat to them. And in this case, this guy was a threat to them since he had been pushing people on the tracks before. So now we have a protest that is going on in New York today. They want justice. So for now, the white guy who did the chokehold has not been arrested. The police has said that they were waiting to see the results of the autopsy. So there is now public pressure from the left for the guy who did the chokehold to be arrested. My guess is he's going to be arrested, and they will unfortunately probably prosecute him. And he's probably going to be punished for doing something that it sucks that people have to do this. It should be the police. They are in a place where the police won't do it. So it's like we're going to lose a guy who had at the bottom of his heart a care for the community he was living in and for protecting the people he was living with. That is too bad. That is what's happening in the left, the leftist states. you are losing high quality people. You are going by selection at the bottom rather than selection at the top. Fractal Man has sent $20. Thank you so much. He says, I think we're going to have a white man's summer. I can feel it. The banks are collapsing. The scholars are tapping out. Let's go, boys. Yes. I've seen someone on Twitter saying white boys summer 2 is inevitable. yes. I don't know what form it will take, but certainly we've been winning. We've been doing well with the community notes, with the takeover of Elon. Things are turning pretty good. In the next few years, I feel like the woke stars will have been exhausted. They will have done their best. They will have shown their evil face. And we're going to have some sort of comeback. Callum Oxford says, white boy summer is such good vibes. Meanwhile, the Russians have been targeted by a drone attack. And people are doing all sorts of accusations on the media, that on the social media, about whether it comes from Ukraine or whether it's a false flag. Even Elon Musk is in the false flag discussions already. When, you know, there's no need for a false flag explanation until you have evidence. So here's the video of the drone, which gets blown up by some defense system. So there we go. You know, the Russian side has decided to interpret this as an assassination attempt against Putin, although Putin was not in the Kremlin at that moment. But perhaps the Ukraine side didn't know this. Now, Elon Musk has the theory that is completely unsupported, that this must be a false flag. They are doing this to give themselves an excuse to attack stronger against Ukraine. You know, my standard for false flag is there needs to be positive evidence that there is false flag. You cannot argue false flag on just, well, think about the interest that they have. Like, you cannot merely think about, well, they would benefit from a false flag, therefore it's a false flag. Because it's a strong accusation. It's an accusation that a side in a war or in a conflict is engaged in defrauding the entire international community, lying, being deceptive. And it's much more wise to say, if you don't have positive evidence for a false flag, it's much wiser to say, it could be a false flag. I'm open to the hypothesis that it's a false flag, but to not make the declaration until you have one piece of evidence. Now, the piece of evidence could be like, was it a Russian drone? Do we have the flight path of this drone by perhaps the U.S., perhaps satellite tracking? Do we know where it came from? Do we know the line of flight? Do we know what kind of weaponry it was equipped with? Those pieces of evidence would be needed to start speculating. On my side, I find it absolutely reasonable to believe that this could be an attack by Ukraine or by a Ukraine sympathetic force, like the U.S., just trying to do something on the Kremlin, quick and a precision strike. Let's remind ourselves that the Ukraine side has been flooded with money by the American Congress. This money is trickling down in all sorts of corrupted networks of all kind, some of which have bombed the daughter of our friend, Alexander Dugin. They bombed the girl. They bombed his car in Russia. So to those of you, not you guys who are watching me, but to those on the Twitter who are saying, Jeff, How can you say it's not a false flag? Putin has all the interest to do it. And Ukraine couldn't possibly do this. And there were people saying that Ukraine is too far from the Kremlin. There's a flight path from Kiev to the Kremlin that's about 500 kilometers. And they don't have to have deployed the drone from Kiev. They could have special operations. They could have flying stuff. They could have just a guy running and going to release the drone himself through the land. Everything is possible. It's not because it's relatively deep inside Russia. It's not because it's not at the border of Russia that it cannot possibly have been launched by Ukraine. That's how they blew the car of the daughter of Alexander Dugin. So if they are able to make a specific assassination attempts and successful assassination in Russia, why wouldn't they be able to fly a drone, perhaps by a corrupted Russian agent that puts the drone in flight inside Russia, or perhaps by simply flying low from the borders of another country? Silver Spider says, it's almost impossible to change their minds. Okay, he was talking about our earlier subject here. We have a lot of subjects tonight. It's a drama bonanza because there are so many fact-checking and did you properly represent me? There's four total conflicts happening. That's why I called it a drama bonanza. We're going to cover all of them tonight. But a couple of news before we get to this. We learned that something I had predicted has come to be true. Parents are now more likely than before the pandemic to question children's vaccination. Immunization rates have declined since COVID-19. I had said that one of the great outcomes of the COVID pandemic abuses would be the complete decredibilization of experts and people choosing away from vaccines that they would have otherwise believed in. That is what happened. When you take the next step in a progressive direction, when you take the next step, because the next step comes in solidarity with the past progresses, you take the risk of undermining the past progresses. People will remember Owen Benjamin making a skit about the T in LGBT. See, the T was coming and was causing problems, was making life more difficult for the activists of the L, the G, and the B. And wasn't it eventually copied by Dave Chappelle or by some big comedian? I don't remember, but I think someone eventually did the same. Yeah, Dave Chappelle may have done a LGBT joke that was also doing a joke on the T. Well, that is the principle that whenever you have a bunch of grifter, a new generation wanting to be solidary to past progressive advancements, they are threatening the credibility of those past advancements. And the same is true of vaccines. When you have a new vaccine methodology, a new vaccine method that may have more dangers, more risks to it, and is associated with more public pressure, as it was the case with the COVID pandemic, you may get a decredibilization of all the vaccines that came before. And that's exactly what we are observing. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, you can also use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. If you'd like to support the show on a monthly basis, join the Patreon, the Subscribestar, or the Backed By. Those are the perfect platforms if you'd like to send monthly support for the show. We do need your support to keep going. So let's start with the drama bonanza, the first between Community Notes and PolitiFact. So PolitiFact has tried to get into the business of decredibilizing community nodes. Now, you are faced with a bunch of internet artists, PolitiFact, people who work behind the veil, including me, by the way. I vote on the community nodes. I rate them in the back of Twitter, in the back end. And so you don't know who you're fighting against, PolitiFact, when you try to smear community nodes. It's a bunch of internet ninjas who take their work very seriously. And you can't accuse them of being wrong if they are not wrong. So it all starts with an initial Randy Weingarten. So she's the union chief for teachers or whatever. She represents the teachers somewhere. And she said, Republicans on the House COVID subcommittee want you to think I wanted to keep schools closed. Here's what I actually said over and over again. Let's listen to what she was saying in that video.
We want to go back to in school. We need to actually get back to in-person learning. I am a big believer that we have to reopen safely and carefully. If you hear the frustration in my voice,
mm-hmm, I do.
We put out a plan at the end of April. The teachers want it.
76% of teachers say they're in for going to school because teachers want to teach kids. They want to go back to school. Yeah. They know that it's important for kids.
We want schools to reopen. We know in-school learning is better than remote.
We've been trying to get kids back.
Okay, so it's easy to take little clips like this and make it look like you've always been for going back to school. But of course, what these clips don't include is that she was putting such conditions on the return to school that it was basically impossible. She was saying that teachers would like to go back to school at part-time. You cannot reactivate a school system part-time. And now the parents can go to their job 3 days a week, but they can't go to their job 2 other days a week. You're fucking up everything when you do this. So it's easy to put some conditions on your openness that ultimately reveal that you're not open to reopening the school. And so the community notes took issue with this clipping. And it's like, hey, let's not forget that this is the lady who was saying that Trump was cruel and it didn't make sense to send back people to school and she was totally against it. Now, she was demanding that there were all sorts of changes to the ventilation systems of schools before teachers ever go back, and that when they go back part-time. You can't operate a school system part-time because the school system, the whole idea, is to well overlap with the work day of the parents. So, I think that it was fair for Community Note initially to say this clipping needs a correction. So, and they don't say that these statements are not true. Of course, she's made this statement. But here's what Community Notes added. They say, Weingarten is misrepresenting her prior positions. She called attempts to reopen schools in the fall of 2020 reckless, callous, and cruel. Her union pushed aggressively at the local level. Areas with high union influence remained closed much longer, and they continued in 2022. So that is important context. Like if someone just sees the clips, it doesn't tell me from the clips that this woman was actively working at undermining attempts at bringing back to school. That is a fairer representation. So I stand by the community note. Now, PolitiFact took an issue with the community note. We'll get to it. But Silver Spider has sent a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, hey, JF, my younger sister has hypotrophic cardiomyopathy and she was wondering what the chances are of passing this condition to her children. She has to undergo surgery every so often and requires daily medicine and a monitoring device. Nobody else alive in my family has any heart diseases. Hypotrophic. So that would mean a heart that is too small, based on what these terms usually mean. Let me read about it. Hypertrophic. So that's not this. Hypotrophic. Are you sure it's hypotrophic? Because I don't get much results on Google for hypotrophic. Okay, there it is. Hypo. No, I barely get any. Barely get any result. Are you sure it's hypotrophy and not hypertrophy? Because I don't want to give you opinions of mine without fully being sure of what was the disorder for your sister. Because I only get hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. Which is a condition in which the heart becomes thickened without an obvious cause. The parts of the heart most commonly affected are the interventricular septum and the ventricles. This results in the heart being less able to pump blood effectively and also may cause electrical conduction problems. People who have HCM may have a range of symptoms. People may be asymptomatic or may have fatigue, leg swelling, and shortness of breath. HCM is most commonly inherited in an autosomal dominant pattern. Autosomal dominant pattern. So that would mean autosomes. Autosomes, are these the sexual or the non-sexual? They are the non-sexual pairs of chromosomes. So dominant would mean that if you have... Okay, it's hyper. He says, sorry, it's hyper. Okay, so if it's the hyper, it was the one I was reading about. And they say that it is often inherited, but in an autosomal dominant pattern. So what that means is that if it's inherited, it's a dominant gene. What that means is that if it's inherited for her, she should have a parent who had that gene, and that gene would be dominant in that parent too. So that parent would suffer from hypertrophic cardiomyopathy too. Now, it's possible, it's always possible that someone has these disorders, like maybe your parents have this disorder, one of them, and maybe they never knew. So it's possible that it's sub-threshold in a parent, now it gets into the daughter, and now it's above threshold for some other reason. Treatment may depend on symptoms and other risk factors. Medications may include the use of beta blockers, verapamil, or disopyramid. An implantable cardiac defibrillator may be recommended in those with certain types of irregular heartbeat. Surgery in the form of a septal myectomy or heart transplant may be done in those who do not improve with other measures. With treatment, the risk of death from the disease is less than 1% per year. Rates in men and women are about equal. And it is an autosomal dominant trait and is attributed to mutations in one of a number of genes that encode for the sarcomere proteins. Currently, about 50 to 60% of people with a high index of clinical suspicion for HCM will have a mutation identified in at least one of 9 sarcomeric genes. Approximately 40% of these mutations occur in the beta-myosin heavy chain gene on chromosome 14. And approximately 40% involve the cardiac myosin binding protein C gene. Children of a single HCM parent have 50% chance of inheriting the disease-causing mutation. So here's the thing. This is not a dramatic disorder, okay? And she shouldn't despair. And you should be careful, because sometimes you say something to a woman and they will use it as an excuse to not have babies. Your sister should have babies. Your sister is a diploid combination of two parents, okay? There is only one side of her genome that even has anything that relates to hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. So here's the thing. Already to begin with, 50% of our children are fully healthy. The other 50%, some of them will suffer from this disease in ways that will not even impact their life. And then some of them might suffer from this disease in a way that is graver. So you already have a very good shot to begin with at life and at having kids. And she shouldn't, you should be very careful about saying something even unintentionally that she could use as an excuse not to have babies. Because the fact is, the whole idea of sex is to get rid of those mutations. If she has 5 babies, there's already 2 or 3 who are not going to have the disease. And then there's 1 or 2 who, there's 2 or 3 who will have the disease, but not in a deadly fashion mostly. And so absolutely make babies. It is worth it. And it is the... That is why life came up with sex, reassortment, so the bad genes can get out, the good genes can pass. But you have to have sex for sex to do its function, you know, sex to do its function of getting rid of the bad genes. Now, I think that your sister should definitely talk with a doctor and consider metoprolol or propranolol. Those are wonderful drugs that are super, super underestimated by doctors. So they slow down the heart rhythm, and they slow down the heart rhythm in a way that makes the heart more efficient, especially for people who have these arrhythmias and who have these just slightly too high heart rhythm, because the heart tries to compensate for those defects that she will have physically in the heart by going faster. And that makes the heart actually less efficient, because the phases of the heart start overlapping above one another. So definitely there are medication routes outside that will get her outside of this problem, and that will alleviate much of the negative effects, so that she will not experience the discomfort or the physiological problems that are stemming from this. And I was reading the Wikipedia, and they do say beta blockers is one of the things that is often used. She should definitely consider that path. She might feel a massive relief. So that's it. Just live, continue life. She has to continue life. She has to continue reproduction, and she has to continue the chain of life. It is not a dramatic disorder at all. She should just act quick, understanding that maybe you'll die a little younger on average than most people. They say 1% chance every year. Well, that stacks eventually, and eventually they probably die quicker. But until then, she should just live her life in full ignorance of this. And Fleur de Sel says, I took propranolol when I was in severe hyperthyroidism. Yeah, and there was someone else who asked me about some things in the private show. And I had said, hey, that sounds like you would benefit from propranolol. And he said it totally changed his life. It totally was exactly what he needed. Propranolol is unfortunately, some doctors don't like it, and they don't fully understand what it does. they don't feel comfortable giving it because it's like a, they see it as a second grade medicine. But if you are suffering from tachycardia, which stems from the, these hypertrophic situations, you're going to love it. She's going to love it. So, yes, that's what I had to say. Michael Monfort has sent a super chat on entropy. He says, JF, off-topic question. Any opinion on the options of a C-section or induction in the case when a woman does not go in labor on time? I think that it is you don't do a C-section just because a woman doesn't go into labor on time. You do a C-section because you think that an induction of labor wouldn't work, or that it you tried an induction of labor and it didn't work. So definitely, if you are just annoyed at the amount of time since the due date, and you really want to cause something, it is, the solution is induction. C-section is if you have clues that the baby cannot pass, or that the passing tunnel would be damaged, or that the bones of the lady are not stretchable enough. Like if you have indications, for example, that the baby is too big, that is something that will lead to a decision of a C-section. But I don't know that you ever do a C-section just because you want to get it done quick. Although you never know, you know, they might very well be headed for this with this whole conception that labor is bad. And but no, definitely induction would be the first solution. And C-section, you do it because everything else has not worked, or you know that everything else will not work. Silver Spider says, JF, thanks. She was so happy to meet my son that she is thinking about kids. She doesn't have it so severe, but she just can't exercise and raise her heart rate with too much physical activity. My father died of a heart attack at 66, so perhaps he had it. Well, if you're telling me this, then I'm even more confident she will love propranolol or metoprolol. The two are equally good in my view at high doses, like up to 80 milligrams propranolol per day, or 100 milligram metoprolol per day. It's exactly this that it will solve. And she may even be able to do exercise again, because those are the beta, they are the beta blockers that are taken for performance anxiety. Now, I'm not telling that your sister has performance anxiety, but the violinist and the professional actors who want to keep a poker face while being nervous, they take these beta blockers because they happen to neutralize your adrenaline system. But yeah, they have this, because they neutralize the adrenaline system, they will shut down the body, especially on those peaks of physical activity or fear or anxiety. And so it's exactly what she needs, so that mere exercises or even just walking doesn't bring our system where it doesn't need to be anyway. Because the fact is that our regular system is bringing our heart rate a little too high anyway. So she doesn't need to be there. And because she has those limits to her heart, it's good to shut this down, to shut this system down with propranolol. And that way she can do everything and she will still feel good throughout the exercise. And the disadvantage with these drugs is they dilute away from the body extremely quick. So that's why there's two solutions. There's the extended release version of propranolol, I believe. They must have one. And then there is also the idea of just taking three of them every day. Because after 8 hours, you're done. The medication has no more effects. He Mayer sends a super chat. He says, make midwives great again. Yes, absolutely. That would be awesome. You can totally trust nature in terms of the ability of the female body to give birth. It will just happen. As a person that I knew who was a midwife once told me, you know, we don't know of a single woman who's walking around with a two-year-old child in her belly. So, and that is the proof that you don't need to cause labor. You don't need a C-section. Every baby will eventually come out of the belly. No worries. And so she had this philosophy that to be so concerned about the due date and are we close to the due date? Are we too late after the due date? She said, a baby will never stay and live inside the mommy. So that means that nature always has a way to get it out. So PolitiFact decided to go after community notes. As I was reading, I think that the community note here is fully justified. Those were clips taken out of context, and the community note simply brings the fact that, hey, there is all of these things that she has said was also in a context where she was effectively blocking the return to school and arguing against it in the way it was done by Trump, at least. So PolitiFact goes after community note and said, They made a whole long story. It's super long to even get into what is their claim. But they said it's more complex. Her tweet was amended with community notes, a Twitter feature that allows users with differing views to add comments that other Twitter users decide is helpful to the discussion. Weingarten is misrepresenting her prior positions, the note said. She called attempts to reopen schools in the fall of 2020 reckless, callous, and cruel. The note linked to stories from The Guardian, Edweek, and The New York Times, which collected data on in-person and remote instruction. And their whole idea is we looked closely at Weingarten's statements, along with news reports, op-eds, transcripts, and video clips of her remarks, and we found that taken in isolation, neither Weingarten nor the Twitter note represented the full picture of Weingarten's efforts and statements at the time. So it's kind of a bizarre way to approach this. they are saying, well, that was a Weingarten is not fully representing her view, but the community notes is not also fully representing her view. But there has never been a claim in the community note that it is a full representation of our full views. A community note normally is a straight to the point bringing of a relevant fact of a context that needed to be said. It's never a claim that you know, you can't make a long blog post on community note. It has to be something straight to the point. Here are the facts. Here's something that we think is missing. That's important context. And then you can go out there on the Guardian website. You can follow the links that they give on the community notes, and you can see the references, follow the links. So I think it's very weird for PolitiFact to be claiming that somehow the community note is not a full representation of Weingarten's beliefs at the time. What do you expect them to do? Write a Wikipedia, an encyclopedic article? It's not the community note job. And so PolitiFact tweeted this attack on community note, basically. And I think that basically it's a hit piece. I think that there's currently a lot of money on decredibilizing community notes. And that's why PolitiFact has been going at it. Now, Community Note has decided to add context to the very PolitiFact attack on them. That is what's beautiful here. I see that High Hypocrite is in the crowd, very happy to see him. He says, I can't tell you how many times I got dinged on Facebook with missing context by fact checkers. Now it's a problem when it's used against them. Exactly. I think this is the war. It's that PolitiFact wants to make it look like they just fact-check community note, when in fact they didn't. There's nothing wrong with the community note post there. Their critique is, well, it's not an encyclopedia. It's not a complete representation of everything that Weingarten ever said. But that is not the role of a community note. The community note comes in and makes a small counter-correction to something that was a little too exaggerated that way. The community note comes as a balance. It doesn't come as a full representation. So anyways, and so now the community note said about the PolitiFact. PolitiFact is misrepresenting Weingarten's positions. She called attempts to reopen schools in the fall of 2020 reckless, callous, cruel. Her union pushed aggressively at the local level. They continued in 2022. So basically, they have repeated the community note statement that was on the Weingarten clip, and now they are saying it on the PolitiFact account. I think that it's a fair attack, because this article, the way it's written, it's painfully written. So it doesn't get to the point. It's like you have to go through the whole, well, you know, she said that, and she said this, and she said that, and she said this, and all of this to make a kind of on-the-side attack toward community notes. So I think that the community note is fair, but I think it should address much more directly what's in the PolitiFact article, because the way they are doing it now, it's a copy of the Weingarten post. Still, it's good. I would vote for any sort of community note on this this attack, because I think it's an abusive gish gallop. It's like, oh, we're going to write a 10-page article that's not going straight to the point, that's not addressing what the community notes truly claim. Instead, it's claiming that, oh, they should have added more context. Well, you can always infinitely add more context. I could write a blog post about PolitiFact right now, find a quote that they didn't find of Weingarten, and say, oh yeah, you know what? They're missing that quote. No one claims to show all quotes. The question is, do you properly represent a view that was expressed by the person? Second conflict, Laura Loomer getting attacked by Milo Yiannopoulos. So yeah, Milo Yiannopoulos is on his quest of vengeance and destruction within the right. And I think based on the evidence that is presented by Laura Loomer here, I believe that Milo Yiannopoulos commits crimes right now against Laura Loomer. And I believe he's going to get into trouble if he keeps doing this. You cannot threaten someone. Simple as, you cannot threaten someone. You can do something, but you cannot threaten someone to get them to change their behavior against their will. You can do the thing that you were threatening. If it's not a crime, you can do it. For example, I can publish an article about how Silver Spider, the super chatter of JFG Tonight, has had sex with a prostitute, and he has snorted cocaine on her ass last Saturday. I can do this, but I cannot write to Silver Spider an email that says, hey, Silver Spider, if you don't send me another $10 super chat, I will reveal that you had sex with a prostitute. I'll be writing a blog post about you. That is extortion. And that is what Milo is currently doing with Laura Loomer. If he has dirt on Laura Loomer, he has the right to release it. But he doesn't have the right to use this dirt to blackmail her, which is exactly what he's appearing to do. Laura Loomer says, first of all, this is categorically false and constitutes felony extortion by Marjorie Taylor Greene's intern, Milo Yiannopoulos, who is threatening me with false accusations and blackmail unless I delete my tweets about her. That's the subject line in his blackmail email. A police report has been filed. I mean, we may have Milo Yiannopoulos being prosecuted here, because I've looked at the email. It makes no doubt to me that it's blackmail. It fits the legal definition of blackmail. So it's all a question of, do we have a DA who's willing to apply the extortion laws? I am not going to stand for this level of harassment and false accusations simply because some people don't like my politics. It's a crime to falsely accuse someone, and it's also a crime to aid and abet an extortion plot. You cannot send someone emails threatening them on behalf of a sitting U.S. congresswoman with a death threat along with threats of blackmail and extortion unless I stop talking about said congresswoman. We all know Milo has worked for and is believed still be working with Marjorie Taylor Greene. Is this what she's having him do for her? Extortion and blackmail over the internet is a federal crime. So let's have a look at the evidence here. Milo was writing apparently to someone perhaps connected to Laura Loomer, John Pierce. Could you make sure your client sees this? Between blowjobs, obviously. Many thanks, Milo. And Milo was writing and was writing an email with the subject, "We are not going to tolerate any more tweets about Marjorie Taylor Greene." Was writing to Laura Loomer and said, "Delete them or I drop a house on you. I have recordings from the men you raped, Laura, video and audio. And that's just the start. Choose your next move really carefully, or you get the Ali treatment. You will not survive. Milo." That is blackmail. That is definitely blackmail. That is as clear as can be. The intent is very clear. The demand is very clear. It was blackmail for the purpose of shutting down political speech against Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now, the only question is whether Milo has an alibi to claim that somehow he wasn't sending this email. But something tells me it's an email by Milo. And something tells me there will be digital traces allowing anyone to be able to prove, perhaps the police or perhaps Laura Loomer, that there will be a way to prove that this email came from Milo for real. And Milo had commented on a post by Laura Loomer saying that she was tired and needed a couple of days of break. And Milo was bragging about him causing this because he said, "Shocking development." And he's basically threatening her to get the same treatment as he gave to Ali Alexander to destroy her. The thing is, Laura Loomer raping boys, raping guys. I mean, I can't imagine her liking sex too much. I can't imagine her liking sex a little more than most women. She has this thing in her face and in her body that makes me think this girl probably likes sex. Probably likes sex. But I don't expect her to have raped a guy. And I'm, you know, given the circumstances in which given the accusations that he was able to make against Ali Alexander, I think that he only got lucky, really, that one of the guys was 15. But probably Laura Loomer is smart enough not to fuck with a 15-year-old guy. And so it seems that whatever Milo has is probably just, maybe Laura Loomer has had sex with guys. I would be surprised that she has raped any of them. I would be surprised that Milo can have a solid story that truly makes her bad. And that's usually what happens when you threaten a lot. It's because you don't have the goods, right? Because if you had the goods, you would surf on them already. You would already be releasing them. So I think that it's a ridiculous attack. And I like the approach that Laura Loomer is adopting here. And Laura Loomer, who has followed me on Twitter, following the, you know, the time I appeared on the Nick Fuentes Twitter space, since I appeared on there and we forgave each other. Since that day, Laura Loomer is following me on Twitter. So I will say that I like the approach that she's taken here. You have to bring this to the police. It's a case of extortion. I would love to see Milo in jail. Now, I don't even hate him that much, but I think it would be hilarious. Like, if this guy wants to mess around and dirty the lives of people and expose people and make people suffer, wouldn't it be fun to see him behind bars for a couple of weeks? That would be fun to me. Silver Spider says, Milo said a long time ago he would go after anyone if it made him a rebel, basically implying that he used to be a liberal and no conservatives are against the system, so he jumped ship. He's too much of a wild card, no principles. Exactly. Even the Joker has more principles than Milo, because Milo is, there's no structure to his whole quest here. Like, oh, you're going to be reminded, you're going to be recorded in history as the guy who took down Ali Alexander. It's a bro, okay. Not particularly fascinating as a realization, you know. The Russian embassy is trolling the UK because the UK was saying that the Kremlin is trying to hide the truth about the war in Ukraine from the Russian people. And the Russian embassy has pointed out, hey, United Kingdom, you are imposing a ban to all Russian media in the United Kingdom on Twitter. So don't come and bullshit us about freedom of press. You don't even have it. Stick Sexton Hammer says about the conflict between the Quartering and Matt Walsh, which we will get toward now. He says, years ago, I called on content creators to generally avoid confrontation, as we all have a greater foe in big tech censorship and legacy media hit pieces. My advice has still gone unheeded. Today, I reiterate that call. Currently, warring individuals know who they are. It would appear that he's talking about the Quartering and Matt Walsh. So let's have a review of this. Apparently, it all started with... the Quartering made a tweet and he had various replies. The initial tweet wasn't naming Matt Walsh, but the tweet was having various replies and quote tweets and links that eventually would allow you to understand that he was talking about Matt Walsh, clearly. And it was about the whole position of, you know, those conservatives who say PC games are bad because they are violent. That violence in video games is a problem. It's a societal problem, etc. And Matt Walsh had made a tweet like this in 2018 and had taken a position against violence in video games and saying it's a problem that it's that way. We should not have so much regularization, normalization of violence. And the Quartering made a tweet today, a couple of days ago. I don't know. I don't think it was today. But the Quartering made a tweet that said the conservative movement will never be successful with Gen Z with this position. It's ridiculous to be against violence in video games. It's a fictitious environment. And Gen Z is totally desensitized to it. And the conservatives have to understand that their base is going to get older and they're never going to get a penetration in the future generations. I don't really care either way. I think both positions are defensible. Personally, I'm a guy who's for liberty in the fictitious world, in the world of artistic representation and video games, but I don't care either way. I guess you could make an argument a la Matt Walsh, and I wouldn't necessarily deny it. Perhaps there are bad consequences, but ultimately, if there are bad consequences, it should be the choices of people to expose themselves to it or not. And initially, the Quartering was saying, so Matt Walsh published a video, and he responded to the Quartering's tweet.
The right's weird obsession with disavowing video games, anime, and social media is why they will never appeal to most of Gen Z. The base is literally dying off, and most of the voices in the community are actively refusing recruits. Well, with all due respect to Jeremy from The Quartering, I think it's safe to say that I have recruited more people into conservatism than he ever has or ever will. I do sometimes, you know, I have to admit, get a little bit tired of hearing lectures on effectiveness from people who are far less effective. The right's weird obsession with disavowing video games, anime, and social...
All right, so decent position. And I would point out that this position works whether you want to believe that the Quartering is a conservative or not. You could see it if he considers himself to be a conservative recruiting people in conservatism. Then you could consider the first degree interpretation of what Matt Walsh is saying. You can also say that in the way he constructed his sentence, it's possible that Matt Walsh didn't want to suggest that the Quartering is a conservative, but he meant, I, as a conservative, am more efficient than the Quartering as a centrist in recruiting people to my YouTube channel and my platform. So I think you can give a loose interpretation of Matt Walsh's words here that don't necessarily imply that the Quartering is part of the conservative movement. But the Quartering didn't allow this broad reading of Matt Walsh's statement, and he said, wild take, Matt, I am not conservative, nor have I ever claimed to be recruiting for them. Comparing our numbers is weird. You were not mentioned in this tweet. It was about the right. That's why I didn't say Matt Walsh. Seems kind of sensitive and pointless in fighting. And Matt Walsh says, come on, man, stand by your words. You tweeted that at the exact moment that people were digging up old tweets of mine about video games. Everyone knows who you were talking about. So I agree that the tweet was made in a context that if you understood the replies and what was happening on Twitter at the moment, it was pretty clear that the Quartering was referring to Matt Walsh. I don't think it's an issue. And the Quartering responds, you're wrong and still deflecting. Why are you so sensitive? My point was about the right, not understanding culture and dismissing things like video games and anime to their detriment. If you took that personal, that's more of a you issue, bud. So that's the little conflict here. Not very productive. And Matt Walsh has eventually answered to the Quartering, you mentioned me by name. I know your whole gig is to start drama with people with bigger platforms, but I really think you should consider generating content another way. Or at least, if you're going to stay on this strategy, stop with the passive-aggressive stuff. It's lame. I also addressed the video game issue in a 10-minute monologue. You clipped 30 seconds of it and then claimed that I dodged the issue. It's the lying and the passive-aggressiveness that's really the problem. Start fights if you want to, but at least be honest. So I think that Matt Walsh is coming out very good on this this little boxing match at the end. Other than this, it's not an important conflict. And yes, the Quartering, being a non-positional person of the internet, trying to be too much of that media guy who really doesn't get into choosing a side seriously, he often gets kind of useless, kind of uninteresting in his contributions. And it's like this one, for example, where you are basically concerned trolling the right, but you're not a conservative. So you don't understand what it is to adhere to a principled conservative position. You don't have to pay the price of being wrong about the structure of your principles and the consistency of your morals, because you're not a conservative. You said it yourself. And so I think it's a very bad practice for people to give those concern trolling to the other side of politics, or if they are centrist, to the two sides of politics. If you're not in a movement, you are not a good counselor or thinker to guide that movement forward, because you may have a blind spot in not being a conservative. The quartering cannot understand what are the necessary conditions to have moral consistency. Perhaps he can think that video games are okay, but perhaps Matt Walsh cannot think that video games are okay, because perhaps Matt Walsh has a sight on taking various positions against leftist culture and how it penetrates TV and how it penetrates games and how he wants to object to them. And if he wants to object to them, it's perhaps better for the moral consistency of Matt Walsh to be saying, yeah, I will also be against violence, because then I want to be also against LGBT activism and against gender nonconformism when it penetrates those games. So all in all, when you're not part of a movement, you're not a good strategist. Don't try to get yourself involved in this movement for the purpose of concern trolling and making it look like you care. You don't really care. I was reminding people in response to, because Elon Musk today immediately tweeted a false flag accusation in response to the Kremlin hit by a drone. You get a false flag, and you get a false flag, and you get a false flag. Everyone gets a false flag. And I said in response to this, sometimes, despite the occasional basedness, one gets reminded that Elon Musk is a bona fide component of the pro-Ukrainian U.S. proxy war machine, here already pushing an unsupported conspiracy theory. Is it so hard to believe Ukraine could send some drones toward the Kremlin after they blew up a Russian philosopher's daughter and did other ops on bridges and Russian targets? I don't know, but for me, it's really not hard to imagine. If you can blow Dugina her car and attempt an assassination against Alexander Dugin in Russia, you can attempt other assassination in Russia. And someone was saying, trying to assassinate Dugin is not equal to flying a drone to the Kremlin, completely undetected. I like you, but why are you shilling for a country that doesn't consider itself European, invaded one of the whitest and most Christian countries on Earth, and supports mass immigration to Europe and USA? First, I'm not shilling for Russia. In general, I'm shilling for peace. Now, it just so happens that the people who really want this conflict to keep going is the Ukraine side. I don't care about being accused of shilling for Russia, but it's just incorrect. Second, this whole idea that, oh my God, we should side against Russia because they've invaded a white country. By this standard, you should side against all countries of Europe. By the way, at the height of European civilization, if you want to be proud of being European, you're going to have to accept that at the height of our peak civilization moment, we were at war with one another. I mean, French against English, English against Germans, Germans against French, French against Spanish. I mean, there's not a combination that we didn't go through. So this whole idea that we have to be solidary with anyone who has pale skin is ridiculous. You're never going to get me on this. This argument is so stupid on its face. First, I don't even consider myself part of the same race as the Ukrainians. Sorry. I mean, they have beautiful women. I don't say the contrary, but it's another race to me. So I don't feel part of their genetic nuclei. And as far as flying a drone to the Kremlin completely undetected, well, I think that this is a false assumption that people are doing on this side, on the whole false flag side of the argument. They think that a drone must have flown undetected toward the Kremlin. But sometimes in military strategy, you want to leave the opponent the shot. You want to let them try their thing. Because by letting them try their thing, you get more information. Imagine that I'm the commander of Russian security for the Kremlin. I know that Putin is not in the Kremlin. He's away. He's on a trip, political trip of some kind. I know what the Kremlin contains. A bunch of offices, tables, and chairs. It's a fucking administrative dying office that contains nothing. Some papers here, some printers here, maybe a laptop here. If I'm the chief of security and I'm being told, Jeff, chief of security, we have sighted a drone. It is 200 kilometers away from the Kremlin. We have 1 hour to take action. It seems to be headed toward the Kremlin for the purpose of dropping a bomb onto the Kremlin. I'm letting it happen. It's like, are you kidding me? The Ukrainians are attacking us and Putin is not even there. I'm letting the drone fly. I'm gonna roll out the red carpet for it to reach the Kremlin and try to throw some explosive onto the Kremlin. I know that the dangers are zero, that anything it can destroy will be easily reconstructable, and it gives me evidence about who was controlling that drone, what was it targeting, and what basically was it the side of Ukraine? Was it Ukraine? So I think that you guys are completely misguided, people like Geo. You are misguided to think that the Kremlin must have been unaware that this drone came for it not to be a false flag. I think there's an in-between hypothesis totally possible where they detect it, but they're like, hey, we have no reason to act. It's a small drone. It cannot carry a gigantic bomb. So the worst case scenario, it can destroy a 10-meter area of whatever it drops on. I'm letting it pass if I'm the chief of security. And I know that Putin is safe. Some random bloke says, the extreme center, how the neocons went woke. Okay. Yeah, they did. They did. I would agree with this observation. And now the quartering was entering in conflict following his Matt Walsh conflict. He was accusing Yan Majchong of stealing money from him. And Yan Majchong says, just to quickly address your personal beef with me, here's a receipt for the money I paid you that you claim I stole, dated January 26, 2019. Beyond that, I don't care. Enjoy your petty grievance. And the quartering is saying, yes, you paid me back only after you first lied to me about what the money was for. You stole it from donators and cried when I caught you. You would have kept right on stealing from me had I not found out you were sending it to an e-girl to buy an iPhone. Your refund is an admission of your crime, Yan. I'm not taking these accusations seriously. I mean, your refund is an accusation, is a proof of your crime. Well, at this rate, then we should never refund. Is that what the quartering is saying? I mean, sometimes there can be a misunderstanding. It's like, okay, well, I don't want to take money from you, so here, I'm giving it back to you. You cannot say something like this. Your refund is an admission of guilt. That is not being productive. If there's been a misunderstanding and someone is honest enough to send you the money back, holy shit, respect him and don't try to smear him years after you got exactly what you were asking for. And the final case that we want to review is there are people accusing Alexandros Marinos of not fairly representing Eliza Yudkowsky when he wrote on his Twitter, yes, Eliza Yudkowsky called for a preemptive nuclear strike. How do we get to the point where the US and China signed a treaty whereby they would both use nuclear weapons against Russia if Russia built a GPU cluster that was too large? So here you have the whole issue with Jewish intellectuals. No matter what their pet subject is, whether it's Sam Harris, it was philosophy and ethics, Eliza Yudkowsky, it's AI alignment. But they can never put aside their hate of Russia, their hate of Trump, and their hate of the whole Russia-Trump axis that they perceive in their head. And so it blurs their thinking. They want to go back so hard at Russia that they will speak it out in ways that they don't quite control, you know? And here, Eliza Yudkowsky, on a discussion that was purely about AI, revealed that he wants China and the US to do a preemptive nuclear strike on Russia if Russia seems to be headed toward building a strong ChatGPT. You cannot do this, Eliza. You cannot keep Russia from developing. You cannot keep intervening on other nations because they get better than you. That is exactly what the American Empire under Judaism control has been doing for decades now, under Israeli control and pro-Israeli lobby inside America. You can't do this. Now, let's listen to what he was saying to be sure that Alexandros Marinos is representing this whole thing properly.
So what does the winning world even look like here? How in real life did we get from where we are now to this worldwide ban, including against North Korea? And, you know.
So he wants a worldwide ban, including against North Korea. So here he's laying out a kind of futuristic view. He's saying, we are here now. How do we get here? And if we were to look back onto here, we would ask, how did we get here? And so he's asking, once the situation of AI is resolved and neutralized, will be a happy civilization. Looking back, what can we say we've done right? Okay? What can we say led to our success? If we were to achieve that success of having neutralized AI.
You know, like that some one rogue nation whose dictator doesn't believe in all this nonsense and just wants the gold that these AIs spit out. How did we get there from here? How do we get to the point where the United States and China signed a treaty whereby they would both use nuclear weapons against Russia if Russia built a GPU cluster that...
So he is saying here, I would consider that we have achieved our goal, and that part of the causal route toward being happy for humanity is to have a contract linking US and China into an alliance, promising each other that we're going to bombard Russia if it ever creates a ChatGPT type AI or a more advanced AI than ChatGPT with too many GPU clusters. So I think that it's absolutely fair to say that as it was phrased in this context, and I've watched the whole interview today, but I'm pretty sure as we come to the reality is watching the rest of the interview didn't give me much guidance as to how do I interpret the words in this clip. I think that the clip, everything that is about this subject is included in that clip. And therefore, it's a fair representation to have clipped it that way. I think that the words used by Eliezer are kind of confusing. And sometimes we wonder if he says did or do. Do we get there or did we get there? Which might change a little bit of the interpretation. But generally, I think it is safe to say that this speech was laying out having a nuclear strike prior, a preemptive nuclear strike strategy signed by the US and China was a desirable goal in his speech. Therefore, I conclude that Alexandros Marinos has been fairly representing, even if perhaps I think he may have said did instead of do. But other than this, I think that it is clear that Eliezer was talking about a goal, and that goal was a positive thing, to have a preemptive nuclear strike policy against Russia. Now, people are accusing him of being wrong. Frank Seri says he was talking about what politicians might come up with as a response. Listen to more than 10 seconds of the interview. Alexandros Marinos says, I have too. And there's nothing elsewhere in this interview that would lead you to believe that our interpretation is false. And on top of it, Eliezer himself has been initially denying those interpretations of his interview, but then eventually understood that, oh my God, I messed up and you're right. I did say it that way. So here he is, as Alexandros Marinos was pointing out, he's half apologizing here. Ah, shit, didn't remember saying that at all. Was speaking extempore and trying to visualize a Finnish surviving world that had come into existence. Not thinking through or endorsing a policy for getting there from here. I wish I had not visualized or spoke of that particular Finnish state. Don't endorse it as a policy goal for today's world. And at the time I spoke was hopeless about any such policy being possible, nor trying to compose feasible optimized policy proposals, because I hadn't yet observed the reception of the Bankless podcast. I agree this is easier to misunderstand, wasn't good to say, and I recant and apologize for that phrasing, an example given the serious policy proposal I later made. So I think that Eliezer is recognizing here that he let off a little too much thinking, a little too much phrasings, and a little too much anti-Russianism in his intervention. And yes, I think it boils down to this. There's a bunch of people on this planet who are roaming with hate in their heart. Hate in their heart against everything white and everything Russian for some reason. And sometimes that hate pops out with the tip of the hair. Sometimes it goes up like the Titanic iceberg and crashes boats that are on their way to a freer world. That is it for tonight. Much love. See you all tomorrow. Thank you.